You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I gotta give Ja like a B.
I
feel like I might be being nice there. I gotta give Ja a B though.
Mm-hmm.
It's not because of his ability. It is not because I don't think he has had moments of being excellent this season. He has had a few games where he has been the Grizzlies' best player, but Ja hasn't been on the court. I can't give somebody higher than a B when you haven't been able to string together 5 games of basketball. And I understand that he can't control injuries. I get it. I get it. I'm not blaming him for that. I'm just saying that the reason I can't give Ja Morant more than a B is because he's just not playing consistently enough. There have been some issues with this season. You can tell that he's trying to figure out the offense. That being said, Ja's passing this year has been phenomenal. I just need to see a few more consistent moments from Ja Morant before I can give him a better grade than that. I still think that Ja's, you know, probably your most important player. Jaren has been this season, but if this team wants to go where it is, Ja's got to be your best guy. He's got to be your most important player, and your most important player just simply has to play the basketball game. So if Ja was playing more consistently, I'd give him a higher grade. This isn't really about ability or production. It's more about he hasn't been playing basketball games as consistently as you would hope Ja Morant has. Again, I understand that those injuries aren't his fault. I'm not blaming him for them, but it's just the reality. It's just the facts. It's just the facts. He hasn't been able to string together 5 games.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the equation. It's part of, at this point, the Ja Morant experience of this season, mm-hmm. and of the last probably 2 seasons as well, is a couple different nagging injuries that are contributing to either missing games altogether or some limited play on the court. I mean,
right.
It's a major hip injury. That's going to affect his mobility. We haven't seen it as of late. Shoulder injury. Oh, why can't he shoot or pass as well? Well, the whole shoulder is not really working too great. So I agree in the B area. I might lean towards maybe a B minus. I think because he hasn't been able to be on the court as much as he wants to, he hasn't really found his fit quite yet in the offense and really trying to carve out that role. And that's one of the most important things for a guy that really is supposed to be the engine of the team, that's supposed to push it where it should be going.
Yeah, he's only had like 1 bad game this season.
Oh,
but everybody had a bad game in that one. The Knicks game, everybody sucked in that game. It wasn't just Jaw.
Jaw wasn't.
He's had some extremely high moments this year,
yes.
And I still believe in Ja Morant fully. It's just play if he can play more consistently,
get more
that's,
comfortable.
That's what you want to see.
Gel with the rest of the team.
Right.
Gel in the system.
Right. And I do think that, you know, adjusting the offense a little bit more to help out Ja is a priority for this team and needs to be done. So hopefully we see that and we can see some steady improvement and consistency from Ja this year.
Scottie Pippen Jr.
I'm going to give Scottie a C+. I think that Scottie has had some moments where I just don't understand what he's doing on the court. It's been a kind of a running joke for me this season, but it's not really a joke. He steps out of bounds a lot. Just a lot of times he's stepping out of bounds. I love his activity, specifically defensively. He can fill it up offensively, too. He can get hot. There's been a couple fourth quarters where it's been like, oh, my God, Scottie Pippen Jr. is here. Specifically, it happened in that Raptors game. He's a lot of fun to watch. I do just think that he has, like, lapses in IQ every once in a while. He makes some dumb basketball plays every once in a while. So as much as I love him and I'm glad he's on this basketball team, I got to give him a C+ just because he turns the ball over higher at a higher rate than you would like him to. And there's just a couple of moments during the game where you're just like, Scotty, what are you doing?
It's a head scratcher.
What are you doing, Scotty? Yeah, so yeah. C+ for Scotty.
Zion Pullen, which
incomplete.
Also a new guy.
Incomplete.
Cam Spencer?
Incomplete.
Also incomplete.
G League? You know.
Cooking.
But incomplete for the Grizzlies.
He's also hurt.
Yeah.
Jalen Wells,
a B+. Or B. I'll give him a B. Jalen Wells has been great for the Grizzlies this season. He's been a huge part of this team. His defense has been phenomenal.
He faces people up.
He's had a bit of a slump here recently with offense, but he showed some signs in that last game against the Clippers of returning to form. I think that Jalen Wells is going to be a very important part of this core moving forward. I'm glad he's a Memphis Grizzly. His ability to defend the best player on the other team has been paramount to some of the wins that the Grizzlies have had this season. It's going to be interesting to see what his role is in the back half of the season and once we get to the playoffs. But I'm a huge fan of Jalen Wells, and I think he deserves a B.
Vince Williams Jr.
This one is, I probably should say incomplete, just because he's only played, like, what, six games?
Six games. Yeah. I'm giving him an incomplete for this one. It's the same thought process as Gigi. I love what I've seen when he's been out on the court. It's been awesome. His defensive, just pure effort in harassing whoever has the ball is one of my favorite things to watch.
How about we give him this grade? We're going to give him a D, but not because it's the D letter grade. It's D for Demon. We'll give Vince a D for Demon. When he's been out there, he's been so much fun to watch. His impact is immediate. Like, everybody that has eyeballs and understands the game of basketball knows that Vince Williams Jr. is a winning basketball player. When he's out there, good things happen for the Grizzlies. So for right now, it's an incomplete, but because he's played six games this season, it would be, you know, disingenuous of me to throw my guy Vince Williams Jr., even though he might be my favorite Grizzly, like a B plus or an A or anything. I can't do that. So, but overall, I mean, I don't think we gave a lower grade. Oh, we got to do the two guys real quick.
Yes.
We got to do the two. Jakey. Yeah, y'all might yell at me. I would give Jake a B. Jake played some winning basketball this year, y'all. He was good. Really good on defense. Really good rebounding the basketball. He was shooting at a high level by the time he left. I think he's going to help out the Kings. I would have given Jake LaRavia a B.
I agree. Probably a B or a B minus.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, his perimeter defense was, at times,
we can tell the
phenomenal.
Truth. He was a good player.
A very good player. And then, of course, last but not least, Marcus Smart.
A D.
I was even going to say incomplete.
He
didn't play much. He didn't play.
He had like two games where he helped you win.
That's true.
I can think of off the top of my head. But he didn't play enough. He played like, 28% of his games that he possibly could with the Memphis Grizzlies over his time here.
Like,
so if you want to give him incomplete, fine. But I'd probably give him a D overall.
Yeah, it did not, just the move in general seemed not to work.
But he seemed
out,
like, you know, he was good on the bench, so maybe that's unfair. So maybe, be fair, we'll give him an incomplete. But
even in talking to him, you know, I got to work media day, talked to him. He seems like a great guy, great locker room guy. I mean, how many times did I say, oh, look, Coach Marcus Smart on the bench when he, you know, was injured?
Yeah, and unfortunately,
he was
a lot, because he never played
that well. And that's fair.
Yeah.
Sadly.
All right. When we come back, we will talk to David Cobbs of CBS Sports. Stick around. You listen to Connor Dunning on 929 FM ESPN. Nothing like Creed on Valentine's Day. Nothing like Creed. Fellas, if you're trying to wine and dine your lady tonight, just put on some Creed. That's all you need. Let Creed talk for you. Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for the big man while he is out. I am now joined by David Cobb from CBS Sports. He is the college basketball, college football writer there. You can find him on Twitter at David W. Cobb. David, happy Valentine's Day to you. How are you doing, my friend?
Happy Valentine's Day to you as well, Connor. I'm realizing it may have been strategic on Gabe's part to leave you on this specific day. It sounds like he might be trying to win some points or something.
No, I think Gabe's actually traveling. They're traveling today. He's going to St. Louis for a family event, I believe. So if anything, I'm praying for Gabe because he is traveling with a young child. So hopefully that's going well for Mr. Gabe Kuhn. But I don't mind it. Listen, man, I will say every single Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, you are my favorite part of the show because it means I get to play Creed on the show. And it is just, I love the resurgence of Creed the last few years. Like, I play it at trivia every single week when I host on Thursdays at Hampline. And this isn't an exaggeration. The entire building is singing along with it the entire time. They're coming to Memphis in a few months, and you better believe my ass will be there.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. So I felt like they could have gone the Nickelback direction for a while there, but they backed off of that, and now they are, It's nothing but bangers with Creed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we have a banger coming up this weekend in college basketball, Mr. David Cobb. The massive matchup, number one Auburn and number two Alabama. Who you got in this game and why?
All right. I am going with Auburn. Maybe recency bias, Connor, because I did see Auburn in person for the first time this year on Tuesday night at Vandy. Saw what they could do in the flesh. They jumped out to a 15-0 lead in that game, and it was just like, wow. You know, most of the fans hadn't even settled into their seats, and here Auburn is with a 15-0 lead on a quality Vanderbilt team. But overall, why I'm going to go with Auburn in what is absolutely the biggest game of the year in college basketball and probably the biggest basketball game in Alabama state history is because they've got two elite rim protectors. And we know if you look at Alabama's shot chart, it's either at the rim or beyond the arc. At the rim or beyond the arc. Nate Oates is a master of the shot chart and the analytics. And, you know, that's where Alabama gets their points. But Auburn makes it so hard to get points at the rim because they have not only Jani Broom, who is an elite shot blocker himself, but Dylan Cardwell down there as well. So the size, the rim protection, I think that's going to bother Alabama over the course of that game. And I'm going with the Tigers. And Connor, we've seen this before. We've seen Bruce Pearl go on the road in a number one versus number two game between in-state foes. And come out as the victor. I don't know if you remember what I'm talking about.
I unfortunately do remember what you are talking about because, as many people know, I root for Tennessee football, but I am a Memphis basketball fan. So that was a tough day for me. I'm sure it was a very exciting day for you. But, you know, you're kind of joking when you say that. But I do wonder if Bruce Pearl's experience in an in-state game like this, number one versus number two on the road, is going to come into play here.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, he is – I think – I give a slight coaching edge to Auburn in this game because Pearl is a vet of these spots. He knows how to get his guys up for these sorts of games. Nate Oates, this whole like national spotlight is still new to them. I mean, they broke through and made the Final Four last season. But Alabama basketball is still getting used to this position of being one of the hunted, right? And so I think there's a little bit of an edge there for Bruce Pearl in that sense because he's walked down that path before. But man, that was a crazy night 16 years ago or whatever it was.
Oh my
God. The first time since then that number one and number two have met from within the same state. We've had a few number ones versus number twos, but boy, you add the rivalry factor to it. Number one, I mean, there's nothing like it. I mean, the scene down there is going to be unhinged. And the crazy thing is the stakes of the game really aren't even that high because whoever loses is still going to have a really good chance to be a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. Auburn is basically impenetrable at that number one seed line at this point. But nonetheless, I mean, the intensity of that game will be unlike anything that we've seen in a while.
Yeah, you know, it might not have any impact on the NCAA tournament, but the bragging rights matter. It is going to matter within the state of Alabama who wins this basketball game. I think I have to agree with you. I would lean Auburn in this game. It's just, of all the teams I have watched, I've watched a lot of college basketball this season, Auburn is just the best team, and they should be number one. It drove me nuts for a few weeks there when they weren't the number one team, when it just felt so obvious that they were. So I do expect them to be able to go in there and pick up a big win. The SEC in general this season, though, has been something we haven't really seen in college basketball. Right now, when you look at the latest bracketology, 8 SEC teams have a 95% chance of making the NCAA tournament, and then the 19 Missouri is at 94%. Have we seen anything like this before in college basketball?
Yeah, I mean, the closest thing is the Big East in 2011 when they put 11 teams in, and I think it might come down to the wire whether or not the SEC gets the new record, which would be 12, because I'm seeing some teams on the bubble out of the SEC that are kind of teetering right now. You mentioned the 8 who have a 94-95% chance or better of making it. I mean, they're pretty rock solid, right? But where I think the SEC is starting to wobble a little bit is the Georgia, Oklahoma, Texas tier. You can now put Arkansas in that category because they're playing well, but they're an outlier because they're actually trending up, whereas like Oklahoma, Georgia, Texas trending down. And then Vandy, I've kind of got them in a holding pattern where they just got to find a way to win a couple more and they'll be fine. But you look at their schedule and it's like, okay, but who are they actually going to beat? I think they can get there. It's just that number could be anywhere from between 11, and in best case scenario, maybe 13. So I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that they're going to have the most ever, but they got a pretty good shot at doing it.
To your point, when you look at the last four byes right now, Oklahoma, Vanderbilt, and Texas are three of those teams. The last four in, you have Arkansas and Georgia sitting right there. So, yeah, you got a few more teams that are right on the bubble for the SEC. I do want to ask you, if I gave you the SEC or the field for the rest of the college basketball season and throughout the tournament, would you take the SEC or would you take the field?
The field is almost always the safer bet, right? But I think I'd actually take the SEC because, you know, I look at the top of the rankings right now, and I see, you know, 10, 12 teams that could realistically win it all. And I think five of them are from the SEC. So, like, you know, five out of the top 12, maybe you should take the field. But of those five, Florida, Alabama, and Auburn are so, so, so good that I think they kind of carry the odds back into the favor of the SEC, because I wouldn't be at all surprised if your national champion is one of those three. Florida, Auburn, Alabama, they just have another gear that most teams don't have, and it's not one-dimensional either. It's both sides of the basketball. So I don't put Tennessee in that category because we know how much they can struggle offensively. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of the same thing with Texas A&M. I mean, they just throw up a bunch of bricks and then try to attack the glass and eventually run up against a team with similar physicality and it doesn't work. So, no, I think those three in particular are kind of why I would take the SEC.
I think I might take the SEC too. It's just, it is very difficult for me to imagine somebody really taking down Auburn. Like if we had to make our bracket today, I think I'd probably pick Auburn as my national champion, which means that they'd probably lose within the first 2 weeks or something like that, because my brackets are always on fire. My pick for you to win the national championship is usually the kiss of death every single March. But moving to local basketball here, Memphis basketball picked up a double-digit win against South Florida last night. David, I don't know if you know this, but they won by more than the metrics said, but still somehow the Memphis Tigers did not go up in the metrics. Can you explain to me why the metrics hate this Memphis Tigers team so much?
I can't exactly explain it, but I watched all that game and was really impressed with the way Memphis handled it. Also, shout out to Dane Bradshaw on the call, the Memphis native and Tennessee grad, who he reminisced some on the Pearl days, and he was actually gone by the time Memphis and Tennessee played in that 1-2 game, but he got talking about that a little bit, because honestly, the game wasn't even that competitive. Memphis did what it needs to do, went out down there and handled business. Then, you know, some of the turnover issues were still a thing. No, I can't explain to you, though, really why the metrics are so down on them, but what I can do, I can give you a comp, right? I'm going to compare Memphis to the last couple of FAU teams because late March or early March, going into the conference tournament last year, FAU was all the way down at 40 in KenPom. And it was the same thing in 23 when they went on their Final Four run. They were a 31-3 team going into the NCAA tournament. But after taking a random conference loss in February, they dropped all the way down to 40 in KenPom. So that it doesn't Memphis being in that range right now in the advanced analytics stuff, it does not preclude them from making a deep NCAA tournament run. That FAU team is the perfect example. In fact, Memphis actually did so much more in the non-conference than that 2023 FAU team did that I think you got to look at Memphis and say, well, if 2023 FAU can make a run, having beaten very few teams of any quality in November and December, then surely Memphis can, despite what these analytics are trying to tell us. So, I mean, that's kind of where I fall on it is, there's a definite disparity between the metrics and the resume that is hard to explain. But I don't think that precludes you or excludes you from the conversation of being a team that could be a real threat in March.
Hey, I will take an FAU Final Four run. If that's the comp that you want to make, David Cobb, I am going to allow it here on the Gabe Kuhn Show on this Valentine's Day. Yesterday over at ESPN, Jeff Borzello released a really good piece about Penny Hardaway and the changes that he had to make heading into the season and, you know, how he approached coaching college basketball in general. My biggest takeaway from this piece can be summed up in one word, and that's accountability. I think that Penny Hardaway really took accountability about the mistakes that he made last year, whether it was with the drama, whether it was being too much of a player coach, and he tried to build the team this season with high character players who could play defense first, and then he went out there and found somebody in PJ Haggerty that he can kind of hang the hat of the offense on. What did you take away from that piece?
Yeah, I mean, my word was humility. And to have accountability, like you mentioned, you gotta have humility first. And so, you know, you can't have one without the other. I mean, that's what strikes me about it. is the fact that here we are in year seven, and Penny is admitting openly to ESPN, this is a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. And you know what? Like, all the credit in the world to Penny Hardaway for being willing to change and adapt and realize that he didn't have all the answers, because this is a guy who could be doing any number of things right now. He doesn't need the money. He doesn't need the attention. But he's chosen to stick with this and take a humble approach to it. And that's what stands out to me about it, because going into this season, man, where were we in August and September with this team and this program? Not in a good place, right? And I think it's the humility of Penny that's allowed them and sort of ignited them to get back on track.
Yeah, and you know, I understand, too, why Penny had struggles when he first got to college basketball. We see it in the NBA. We see it in college basketball. Sometimes the all-time greats, when they come to try to coach, they can struggle because they don't understand why their team can't see the game of basketball the same way that they do. And it's like, well, Penny, maybe it's because you're just quite literally one of the best point guards we have ever seen. So holding your players to the standard of you may have been a bit unfair. So it just took that little adjustment from Penny, and you are seeing that come into effect this season. Like, this team this year seems focused. They're not getting down on themselves. And even in those losses that they have had, Penny isn't throwing anybody under the bus. He is taking accountability. He is saying, I need to better prepare this basketball team. So that's why, you know, I've seen him pop up in a few coach of the year discussions. I understand that he's not going to win it because there's other coaches with better records and better conferences this season. But it is nice that, you know, a year ago, right now, there were conversations being had. I don't agree with them, but there were conversations being had about the future of Memphis basketball and Penny Hardaway. And then just a year later, it feels like it's done a 180.
Yeah, it was a prove it year. This has been a prove it year for Memphis. And I'll say this, the finish line has not arrived.
Right. They still got six games left in conference. Yeah.
At this point, though, I'm not even worried necessarily about those games. It's just like, from a common fan's perspective, you put so much emphasis on NCAA tournament success, right? And whether that's fair or not, ultimately, like, okay, not in terms of his job security. Like, he's saved his job at this point. Yeah. Like, that question has been put to rest for the time being, barring some out of left field, NCAA issue, whatever. But I still think the jury is out on how the season will be remembered. Whether it's fair or not, coaches are judged based on what they accomplish in March. And given who Memphis beat in November and how good those teams have gone on to be, Michigan State, UConn, Clemson, the list goes on with Ole Miss and a handful of others. Missouri's really, really a good team now. Based on your victories over those guys, you're expected to not just make the NCAA tournament, which I think was kind of the bar that a lot of us had for them going into this year. Okay, it's like now you feel like you should win at least a game, maybe two. So, I mean, that's the next step here and sort of figuring out how we evaluate what Penny's done through 7 years is, can he get them further in the dance than he has at any point in his tenure? So I think he's got the team to do it. It's just, obviously, it's not something that they've really been able to do before is make a run, but that's kind of the final frontier.
Right, and that's why, again, it goes back to what seed are they possibly going to be. I know that tonight we were expecting to get this, like, top 16 kind of seeding map that they're going to send out, and I'm hoping to see Memphis in there because I believe that they should be somewhere between a 4 and 5 seed. It's just being in this dog conference, if you lose one game in it, because two of their losses are in quad 3, but the other two losses that they have are quad 1 losses, and it just feels like those quad 3 ones are weighted triple what those quad 1 losses are, so that's a bit unfortunate. But no, I agree with you. For me, the bar for success for this team this season was you have to make the NCAA tournament. If they can win a game in the NCAA tournament, that would be fantastic. I do think that they have the makings of a team that could make a run, but it's all going to come down to matchup, which again is one of the reasons we all got to keep an eye on these damn metrics, because we just really have no idea how they're going to view the Tigers by the end of the season.
Yeah, right. I kind of view them as tiebreakers. Like, if I'm evaluating a resume and I'm like, these resumes are similar, I don't know who to rank above the other on the seed line, then I look at, all right, what do the predictives say? So that's where Memphis is going to get dinged. It's because when they're going through, I'm sure they've already done it, and deciding who these 16 are going to be in the preview, yeah, they're going to use the metrics probably as more of a tiebreaker than anything. And yeah, there's just so many teams that are jumbled together with similar types of resumes, and Memphis is one of the hardest to evaluate. I got them at 2-1 versus Quad 1A, which is that elite upper crust, cream de la cream type of category. Yet, they have two of these quad three losses. So it's all subjective too, sort of. Like, there is no exact percentage on what's weighted how, and so that, you know, these are humans making these decisions. And you know, I think when it comes down to it, a lot of times a team like Memphis is not going to get the benefit of the doubt because people are just kind of going to look for things they're going to cherry pick and see what they want to see. And a lot of times the brand names end up with better seedings and better positioning in this sort of thing than maybe they should. I'm with you. I'm between a 4 and a 5 on them, but I guess I'd kind of be surprised if they are included in the top 16 tomorrow. And what's scary about that is you don't know where you are. Like, if you're not in that top 16, they don't say, like, that's it. Like,
right.
You don't know if you're the first 5, or if they've got you as an 8. Like, there is no way to know. So that's what's kind of concerning. And then real quick, one thing that stuck out to me last night watching that South Florida game is how even in the last minute and a half, you could see the bench and Penny were sort of encouraging Memphis to keep playing. You know, South Florida had stopped playing and stopped caring. But Penny was sort of, you know, running his finger like, hey, guys, like let's keep going here. And the reason why you do that is you're not showing up your opponent. It's nothing like that. You're literally just trying to position yourself to have the best seed possible in the NCAA tournament. And if these advanced metrics rope in margin of victory, then, yeah, you have to keep playing even with under 4 minutes remaining in a blowout.
Yeah, I've said that the Tigers almost have to approach the rest of the season like an NBA Cup game. Like, you have, like, the margin of victory is going to matter. It is going to matter for your seeding. It is going to matter for your metrics. Should it? Probably not, but it absolutely will this year for the Memphis Tigers. Well, David Cobb, I want to thank you so much for joining me today, and I hope you have a great Valentine's Day with your family.
All right, brother. Thank you.
That was David Cobb. He is a college basketball and college football writer for CBS Sports. You can find him on Twitter at David W. Cobb. When we come back, I'm going to let George off the leash. It is time for him to tell us how he really feels about Aaron Rodgers and his New York Jets era, if you even want to call it an era. I cannot wait to hear what King George has to say. Stick around. You're listening to Connor Dunning on 929 FM, ESPN. I have a feeling George chose this song for a reason heading into this segment. This is Connor Dunning. You're listening to the Gabe Kuhn Show here on 929 FM, ESPN. I'm filling in for the big man until he is back. It is the time in the show. I've been looking forward to this all day. King George, he is a New York Jets fan. He's one of the strongest souls out there. It's one of the hardest franchises to be a fan of. And he has some big thoughts and big feelings when it comes to Aaron Rodgers and his era. Can we even really call it an era with the New York Jets? So here's what I'm going to do here. I'm just going to give George the floor and let him go. George, it's all you.
So for one, I'm gonna start with saying I prefer to call it a tenure as opposed to an era.
A tenure, okay.
With the Jets.
A cup of coffee.
Yeah. Essentially his part-time job, since he felt it was a lot more prudent to spend his time either in the dark or
on ayahuasca.
Rehabbing a torn Achilles or on the Pat McAfee show. I don't know whether he spent more time on the television or in the weight room. These are all questions that I have, but I don't actually think you're going to get the crazy, insane reaction that you might be hoping for, because at this point, it's over. At this point, it's just the aftermath. It's the what is next. And looking back on it, it's kind of crazy to look at and think, was he actually that bad last season? As a player, no. I mean, he wasn't great. He was by no means a winning key cog in the team that only won 5 games last season. He turned it on towards the end of the season to show, I guess, whatever prospective teams are going to pick him up, say, hey, guys, look, still have a little something in the tank as long as I'm throwing at Devontae Adams, because he wasn't thrown enough to Garrett Wilson, I'll tell you that much. But, I mean, he ended the season with over almost 4,000 yards, 28 touchdowns to 11 interceptions, and for a replacement-level quarterback in a lot of teams, you know, that's an above average replacement level quarterback right there. It's not the worst. We've seen worse. I saw some more advanced metrics. I want to say it was the Jets reporter from The Athletic put some context to that he really didn't affect winning all that much. The advanced metrics don't look nearly as sterling as those, but all in all, it just leaves a normal taste in my mouth. Because it's the Jets. And of course, nothing the Jets do with even the best of intentions can go right. It's just typical. It's absolutely typical of this franchise, of this ownership group, to start the season. This is the crazy thing for me. I understand they started the season 2-3. Not a great start. Not a good start when you had all these expectations. But then they go ahead and fire their coach. Fire Rob Saleh 5 games into the season when it seemed as though he had a nice runway there. And immediately they go from a top 5 defense in the NFL. I'm talking a top 5 scoring defense in the National Football League with Rob Saleh head coach and Jeff Ulbrich as defensive coordinator. Connor, do you know where they ranked the rest of the season in that same metric?
I'm going to guess bottom of the league.
29th, yeah. If I remember correctly.
Yikes.
They go from 5th in the league to 29th in the span of a week because they said, defensive coordinator, you're the head coach now, buddy. You're not going to bring anyone else up as your replacement? Sounds good to me. And then just midway through the season, they say, also, general manager, the guy who presumably has some thoughts and opinions on how we can go about fixing this roster-wise, see ya. Bye. Pack your bags. You saw the writing on the wall anyway, so we'll just pack it up for you, cleaning out your desk. All that's to say, for this to be the first move of Aaron Glenn's tenure, or hopefully the Aaron Glenn era as head coach, I'm all for it because this just tells me that he's walking in like, you know, he's the big guy in the locker room. He's saying there's only room for one Aaron in town, and it ain't you. It's me.
I agree. It's just,
I love it.
It's not about his talent anymore. It's the distraction that Aaron Rodgers brings.
Bingo.
And the fact that one of the no-goes for him was the Jets asked him, hey, man, if you want to come back to this team, you cannot do the Pat McAfee show every single week. Because, again, don't forget, last season Aaron Rodgers was preaching, we don't need to have distractions. We've had too many distractions on the New York Jets. It's like, Aaron, you are the distraction.
You're the main
the
one
there,
guy.
The distraction has a name, and the name is Aaron Rodgers. That is you, brother. That you have been the distraction for the New York Jets. And the fact that he was like, nah, I'm still going to do the Pat McAfee show, just kind of tells you right there the issue with his time in New York. And that's why it's going to be a fascinating question now this offseason. Where does he go? Because there are teams that make sense. There are teams that need a quarterback. Is it worth the headache, though? But every single team that you could bring up for him, you know, potentially landing on, there is a negative with every single one of those teams. I have seen people float the idea of the Titans. I do not want that to happen. I would rather the Titans draft a quarterback with the number one pick. I'd rather it be Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders. See what they are, because the Will Levis, the Mayo boy, gone. He's very clearly not an NFL starting quarterback.
I'm glad that caught on.
Well, the
it.
Moment he was like, I'm going to, you know, hitch my wagon to mayonnaise, we were like, red flag. That's a huge red flag there. We should have known where this was going to go.
It's a fine condiment.
But like, when you look at the teams that need a quarterback, the most obvious one to me would be the Raiders. But then when you have Tom Brady in the ownership group, is he gonna want to deal with the headache of Aaron Rodgers? So where does he land? Does he just go across town to the Giants? Is that a possibility? They need a quarterback. It's just every single team. I mean, the Saints, they need a quarterback. Maybe he goes down to New Orleans, but does Aaron Rodgers really want to go down to New Orleans and the last days of his career be spent down there? It's going to be fascinating to see where he lands. Really, maybe it's the Browns. You know, they seemingly don't really have a problem with people's history or how much of a distraction they are.
Who knows?
Maybe it's the Browns. It's going to be fascinating to see, though. All right. When we come back, it is Valentine's Day. George and I are going to give you the top 5 movies that you can watch on Valentine's Day. They don't necessarily mean they are Valentine's Day movies. It's just movies that you can watch on Valentine's Day. Stick around. Listen to Connor Dunning on 99FM ESPN. All right, welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe Kuhn. It is Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day to everybody out there. And for Valentine's Day, you better believe I'll be watching a Valentine's movie. Now, I have a top 5 list for you, movies that I would recommend you watch with a loved one on Valentine's Day. Does it mean the movies are set on Valentine's Day or about Valentine's Day? No, actually, I don't think a single one of these is actually set on Valentine's Day or about Valentine's Day, but they're about love, they're about yearning, and the pursuit of love and heartbreak. Now, George did admit something to me during the break that I was unaware of. He does not have a top 5 list. George is just like, I looked through all these movies and I don't have one. So, but yeah. That's okay. Because luckily enough for George and lucky enough for the listeners, I am a cinephile. I am the man with the plan. I have a top five list. I, you know, something tells me, George, I might be able to carry a movie segment by myself.
Just
I'm not,
maybe.
I'm not too worried about that. Very much like you could do, you know, you could tell me, explain it to me like I was 5 years old, what's going on in hockey right now, because I have no idea. every time I see it pop up, I'm like, I have no idea what the hell's going on here. Looks like Team USA is doing well, though.
Yeah, it's USA. Cool.
Yeah, USA. Yeah, sick. Yeah, USA winning. Awesome.
I will
here
contribute by letting you know how many of these movies I've seen.
Oh, God. That's just going to hurt my heart. Okay, here we go. We're going to get started. I'm going to start with number five, movies that you should be watching on Valentine's Day. We have to start off with a movie that is, it is the poster for yearning for a loved one. It has to be Pride and Prejudice. Jane Austen's beloved novel, Pride and Prejudice. Mr. Darcy, if you are a man out there and you are not pursuing your woman the same way that Mr. Darcy pursues his, there is no reason that you should be in love or pursuing love. He is the bar, gentlemen. Mr. Darcy is the bar for how you should be pursuing and yearning after your women. So Pride and Prejudice is my number five. Great novel, too. If you haven't read it, highly recommend it. Number four is Notting Hill. Have you heard of Notting Hill, George? Have you heard of Pride and Prejudice?
I've heard of them.
Uh-huh.
I've not seen them.
Okay, that's tough. I understand not seeing Pride and Prejudice. Notting Hill, though, you absolutely need to see. Notting Hill's very funny. Highly recommend. There's a beautiful bookstore involved in it. And just somebody that I am absolutely in love in. She might be my number one pick of all time. Julia Roberts. Oh, brother. Julia Roberts. In this movie, she's throwing about 1,000 miles per hour. Notting Hill, number four. Great love story to watch on Valentine's Day with the person that you love. Number three, Princess Bride.
Of course.
Thank God. Thank God, George. I was going to have to come through the glass. If you
that one
seen
would have been
Bride.
Almost disrespectful.
The pause right there was scary. The pause right there was very scary. Princess Bride, I don't have to explain to people what Princess Bride is. Number three, one of the best love stories of all time. Fantasy movie. Highly recommend seeing it if you hadn't. Number two, I'm going to cheat here with number two. I've got Before Sunrise and Before Sunset. Some inside baseball here. I actually just watched these for the first time within recent months, and they hit me like a bus. These two movies are unbelievable. It is just following these two people who meet in Paris one night, in Vienna one night, and they have this a magical night together. And then 9 years go by, they haven't seen each other, and they are able to be reunited and have another chance at love. It is about love, you know, and the human and humans fighting through time and fighting through circumstance to find each other, to be with somebody that they're supposed to be with in this world. Now, the third movie, don't want to see, because I think the third movie goes the other way, because it's that one's called Before Midnight, and apparently it's not like the first two. So I haven't seen that one yet, but the first two movies, Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, some of the most romantic movies I have ever seen, some real truth within these movies as well. Number one, one of my favorite movies of all time, When Harry Met Sally. When Harry Met Sally. George, have you seen When Harry Met Sally?
No.
Okay. That's a huge sin. That's a huge sin. I'm not sure you're going to be able to do the show with me next time. When Harry Met Sally.
It is going on the list, though.
That movie needs to be watched immediately. Talk about two people who are supposed to be together. Very similar to Before Sunrise and Before Sunset. It's about two people fighting through time and circumstance to ultimately be with the person they are supposed to be with. Very funny movie, very heartfelt movie. Two of the best leading performances of all time in said movie. A lot of very famous scenes during this movie as well. But that is going to be my top five Valentine's Day movie list. Pride and Prejudice, number five. Notting Hill, number four. Princess Bride, number three. Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, number two. And When Harry Met Sally, number one. When we come back, Parker Fleming from Substack Elitist is going to join me to talk about NBA All-Star Weekend, the Grizzlies, and areas where he thinks the NBA could improve the NBA season. Stick around. You're listening to Connor Dunning on 99.9 FM, ESPN.